In September 1977, as Voyager 1 launched carrying humanity's golden record into the cosmos, something extraordinary happened in Philadelphia. Baby Adina Giorno entered the world yellowed like old newspaper, with a full head of black hair, instinctively drawn to the heat lamp in her incubator. While Carl Sagan's team sent Chuck Berry and whale songs into space, Adina began life as an otherworldly observer in Northeast Philadelphia. During her difficult birth, something lighter and more conscious, detached from her mother's body, slipping into a corridor with darkness behind and light ahead. Her name means noble day, fitting for a being who would spend her life studying humanity's light and darkness. The cosmic and ordinary intertwine in Adina's earliest moments. While Voyager carries humanity's achievements into the void, Adina begins her mission of observation on Earth. What does it mean to be simultaneously of a place and apart from it? How might someone not fully human experience our world? As she grows, Adina develops an extraordinary sensitivity to heat and light, constantly seeking warmth like a plant bending toward the sun. An alien consciousness drawn to the energy that sustains life, forever reaching toward illumination, both literal and figurative. What could be more alien than being a teenager? For Adina, adolescence becomes a double estrangement. Both typical teenage alienation and her actual extraterrestrial nature creating layers of isolation. After a humiliating encounter with the popular J-Girls, Adina abandons social ambitions for academics, imagining her cosmic superiors will praise her as the best human and superior to those J-Girl slutbags. Her friendship with Tony provides temporary grounding as they spend summer watching television, where Adina develops strong opinions about narrative consistency. From movies, she compiles notes on alien portrayals, beings initially welcomed but ultimately rejected, painful mirrors reflecting society's rejection of difference. At night, she contemplates Carl Sagan's writings about advanced extraterrestrials while listening to Philip Glass, having become an American teenager. Isn't this the universal adolescent experience, feeling fundamentally different and alone? Adina's literal alienness serves as the perfect metaphor for teenage isolation. In the 1990s, Adina works the early bird shift at the Red Lion Diner, where veteran waitresses eventually accept her as Little One and shield her from vulgar customers. This workplace becomes an unexpected community where remembering specific customer preferences matters more than her differences. At 19, Adina lives a solitary routine, counting tips, exercising, showering, tracking stars, and filing notes in her childhood bedroom. She grieves deeply when Carl Sagan dies, feeling one of her fathers is gone. Sagan embodied wonder rather than fear when viewing the cosmos. Her writing talent emerges covering a lacrosse match, though editor Keith Nguyen is bewildered by her impressionistic style that omits scores and team names. Her perspective, seeing patterns and energy instead of conventional details, makes her an exceptional observer of humanity, but a poor sports reporter. Adina struggled to reconcile her cosmic consciousness with her mundane job mirrors our compartmentalized identities. Watching a nature documentary, Adina becomes fascinated with Pando, a genetically identical aspen grove that is technically one organism, the singular plural, which resonates with her alien nature. This discovery becomes her metaphor for human connection, the possibility that separation is an illusion, and we might all be parts of a greater whole despite our apparent individuality. At 22, Adina plans to visit the Pando Grove in Utah. Despite her fear of flying, she boards anyway. During turbulence, she panics, locking herself in the bathroom and counting to 500. When asked what she fears, she answers, "Staying the same forever, and wind." Instead of visiting the grove, she impulsively buys a train ticket to New York City, a turning point where she begins trusting her instincts rather than following predetermined paths. Before leaving Philadelphia, Adina attempts to tell her mother about her alien origins. Her mother misunderstands, thinking Adina is expressing alienation rather than literal extraterrestrial identity. This miscommunication exemplifies how often we reveal our true selves only to have others interpret our truth through their limited framework, a connection gap that mirrors the wider challenge of genuine understanding. Adina moves to New York as astronomers discover a red dwarf star in Aquarius orbited by seven Earth-sized planets. She settles into a junior one-bedroom beneath flight paths in a neighborhood filled with constant sound, planes overhead, the elevated 7 train, and halal meat cart vendors. These sounds of movement make her feel like a sort of hub. At the Lunar Surface literary magazine, Adina's unusual perspective becomes an asset. Her eccentric colleagues provide a community where difference is celebrated. She adopts Butternut, a dog who loves her unconditionally. Meanwhile, Adina's childhood friend Tony battles terminal cancer. When doctors suggest stopping treatment, Tony defiantly responds, "What's that supposed to mean? Try something else." As Tony's care shifts from curative to comfort, Adina witnesses something profound during her final moments, a light emanating from Tony's chest that fills the room, the city, and beyond. This transcendent experience suggests death might be transformation rather than ending, a return to a greater whole, like the aspen grove she once sought to visit. At Tony's funeral reception, Adina learns her friend published a memoir exposing Adina's extraterrestrial nature. Tony's publishing colleagues explain the book has sparked intense online debate between believers and non-believers. Suddenly, Adina's private identity becomes public speculation. After the funeral, Adina visits Beautyland, the department store from her childhood. Now renovated, only the perfumery remains unchanged. She realizes the fragrances she once thought luxurious were actually budget brands marketed to working mothers. A clerk mentions many people visit to see the renovation, and they discuss the oddly named neighborhood businesses, named after places to sound like places, so you think you're home. This observation mirrors Adina's experience perfectly. Things designed to create familiarity often highlight one's fundamental displacement. The once magical perfume counter now appears ordinary, yet retains its emotional significance. The essence of growing up, seeing through illusions while still honoring their importance in our development. Adina embodies both observer and participant in human experience. Her dual perspective reveals patterns others miss while preventing her from fully inhabiting moments without analysis. Mirroring our modern tendency to simultaneously live experiences and document them, feel emotions and analyze them, belong yet feel separate. By the novel's end, Adina fulfills her mission not by reporting on humanity, but by becoming fully part of it, loving, grieving, and transcending individual existence. Her journey suggests true understanding comes from complete participation, not detached observation. The final image, Adina joining a glittering, infinite expanse where voices welcome her home, offers a vision of transcendence both alien and familiar. This speaks to our universal longing for belonging, whether interpreted as death, cosmic return, or metaphorical transcendence. Perhaps the most alien act is fully embracing our humanity, accepting our brief existence as part of the singular plural connecting all consciousness across the cosmos.